Welcome to The Author Meets the Critics, where today's guest is the famous New York lawyer, Morris Ernst. Mr. Ernst is the author of a new book called So Far, So Good. And here's what two representative critics think of Morris Ernst, author. First, another eminent New York attorney, Mr. James F. Murray, Jr.
If you've ever had any doubts about the number 13 being unlucky, you'll surely be convinced if you toil through the 13 chapters of this book. So Far, So Good is more than merely disappointing. It's presumptuous, reckless with its facts, and often downright offensive. Than to compile this opinionated encyclopedia of generalities and misinformation.
And now, on the other side of the fence, the executive secretary of the Research Institute of America and an old friend of this program, Mr. Leo Chern.
It's hard to realize that we're talking about the same book. I must very honestly say that So Far, So Good, another excursion by Morris Ernst into ideas and recollections, is as warm and challenging as its author, and almost as scattered and wonderful as his many travels and crusades. I thought it a grand book, and 13 chapters inadequate to convey the excitement of Morris Ernst's life.
Well, that's how the critics feel. In a little while, Morris Ernst, author, will rise in his own defense for a cross-examination of his critics. But first, here's an announcement of special interest. Today, there are thousands of war veterans still in hospitals, cut off from friends and work and pleasures. The Author Meets the Critics would like to suggest that you send a new book for these veterans, a book that you yourself want to read, a book that your friends are discussing now. A book like that makes a link between you and your busy outside life and the veterans waiting patiently to return to it. There's only 1 week to Christmas, and Christmas is the time to give. But any time of the year, all the year round, is the right time to remember the disabled veterans. Whether they are lying flat on their backs in hospital beds or wheeling themselves around the wards and chairs, they all want to feel part of the world they fought for and belong to. The best way you can help is to give a new book. Later in the program, we'll tell you where you can send such books to show that you remembered not to forget. And now here's your regular chairman of the Author Meets the Critics, John K. M. McCaffrey.
Good afternoon, everyone. Morris Ernst is a distinguished New York lawyer, but his work in the Civil Liberties Union and his successful defiance of censorship in many celebrated causes have stamped him one of our leading champions of civil liberties. Mr. Ernst has also written several books. Perhaps you recall The Best Is Yet, which was a recent bestseller. Mr. Ernst was on The Author Meets the Critics to defend that book, and here he is again to talk about his latest, So Far, So Good, Mr. Morris Ernst.
All I can say now is I had a very good time writing the book. I got sore at most of my friends after the atom bomb was discovered, and they all said that civilization is doomed. We're at the crossroads of civilization. There's no hope for man. And I really think we're starting on a mass renaissance that man never had the opportunity on this planet before, such as he has now. And I'm a person with hopes and optimism, and it's probably glandular, but I like to live that way.
Well, now, in view of Mr. Ernst Glanz, is your heart still cold to his opinions, Mr. Murray?
Well, among the many things that's confused me in this volume has been this minor issue of glands, and I hope sometime before the discussion is over we'll get a definition of just what a glandular optimist is, if it can be encompassed within this program. But what's disturbed me is that Mr. Ernst has seen fit to wander from his own field, in which he's very distinguished and very eminent, namely the practice of law, and set himself up on an authority on almost everything and anything that interests him, most of which he's not qualified to speak. From the future of atomic energy to what's wrong with Orthodox and Zionist Jews. The pity of it is that he takes himself seriously in this role as a public scold. His vicious attack, for example, on the American medical profession, about which he admittedly knows nothing, and the Roman Catholic Church, about which he knows even less, are absolutely inexcusable and unjustifiable in my mind. Indeed, instead of the title So Far, So Good, I've been wondering whether or not it might be better to call this book So Far, Too Bad.
I gather that you don't hold with this, Mr. Chern.
Not only don't I hold with it, but it seems that the charge of carelessness with the facts is particularly unpleasant when, according to James Murray's own comment, he said that Morris Ernst has ventured into fields of which he knows little, and then selects two, The comment on the medical profession and attack on the Catholic Church in an area in which Morris Ernst not only knows a great deal, but is the attorney who has most actively pursued the particular area of research into which both of these groups were involved, namely birth control. And I think perhaps we may have the key here to Mr. Murray's acid concern about the book. Morris Ernst is not kind in this book, nor would I have been had I written it, about the non-availability of information on birth control to those who seek it and to those whose religion permits them to use it. And Morris Ernst is an extraordinary position to convey some of the drama and some of the frustration that flows from the effort on the part of a few pioneers in medicine to make this information available to their own patients. I think he knows a great deal about it and has conveyed a wonderful fund of information to us in his book.
Mr. Murray.
Well, we'll come to that directly. Of course, we're going to meet on it. There's no question about it. And I will attempt, as far as I can, to enjoy Mr. Ernst's own words in quotation back to him. But before we come to that, I'd like to examine, first of all, very briefly, just my criticism on the form of this book. This book, as Mr. Ernst himself admits in the early pages, has been hastily written. It's a literary hodgepodge. He says himself, "I don't know what'll come out of this volume." Well, that's perfectly obvious if you read it. There's no evidence whatsoever of organization or planning. In fact, boring trifles and merely personal items are dragged out at great length, and chapters which, in my opinion, would be particularly intriguing and interesting, perhaps even for a whole book, such as his escrow plan and labor management and his consideration of the first freedom treaties, his discussions and personal relations with Franklin Delano Roosevelt. They're worthy of an entire book, and he crams them off and dismisses them in two or three separate chapters. In fact, he compares his system of writing to what at Nantucket is known as a rantum scooting, and I gather that is a process whereby one gets an old jalopy and drives at random and blindly through the ruts and furrows of the beach there. Well, I can only say about that what I heard someone say about Gertrude Stein's writing. A friend of mine was criticizing it in Paris one time, and a defender of Miss Stein said, "But my dear, you don't realize it's frightfully difficult to write that way." My friend replied, "Yes, I wish to heaven it were impossible," and that's my feeling about this.
I'm reminded of an extraordinarily good example of rantum scooting and scattered writing, the journals of Samuel Pepys, which have served to enrich the hearts and spirits of men for many, many, many years, despite the fact that the author of those very random journals paid very little attention to the gravity of the subjects he discussed or the writing itself. Morris Ernst, in this book, happily, is a brilliant example of an attorney who also believes he's a human being. This is perhaps an appropriate opportunity for me to say, I left the practice of law myself, and one of the reasons I left it is because I grew unhappy with the fact that some attorneys at least believe that the only function of the lawyer is to concern himself solely with that which is within the province of a case, and usually his own case. I believe the attorney, if he's a vigorous member of our society, is also one who is concerned with problems such as labor management peace, with problems such as a freedom of press and opinion treaty, with problems such as birth control, with problems such as those of ordinary living. I believe an attorney is entitled to live, think, feel, breathe, and convey the richness of his experiences. This, in my judgment, Morris Ernst has done brilliantly. I think Mr. Murray wants not a book of ideas, but a mirror in which he will find echoed his own attitudes and prejudices and beliefs. And I think he can find one far less expensively and enjoy it with less effort than he might the pages of Morris Ernst's book, which obviously do not mirror that which he would like to find himself.
I think, Mr. McCaffrey, it's probably time to look at the record here. Now, one of the disturbing factors about this book has been the abundance of gratuitous statements which abound everywhere. It's very difficult to select. You can find them on almost every page. But just to give the people an idea of about what I'm complaining, I've selected a few of them. Repeatedly throughout this book, Mr. Ernst warns us, and with justification, I think, to avoid pontifical people, as if you would avoid the plague. And having come through with that statement, I can't help but wonder if he's read his own book. Listen to him, for example, epitomize the problem of atomic energy. In one sentence, he dismisses it. It may do as much for man, he says, as the discoveries of Sigmund Freud, although it can never be the equal of Freud. That is his statement on atomic energy. He has a lot to say about the divorce problem, in which certainly we could expect a more complete treatment from one of our most distinguished attorneys at bar in New York. He said, unfortunately, at an early date, there crept into the increasing powers of the state the concept that government should assume control over the mating and unmating of men and women. And then he leaves that hanging in the air. Now, after all, we look for something concrete from this man. He's an authority, at least in this particular field. He wants no state control. He wants no church control over divorce. What does he want? No control? Every man for himself? Mail order marriage? They tried that in Russia. And even there, they dismissed it 10 years ago as unworthy and unpracticable.
How wonderful it would have been if Mr. Murray had completed his reading of that rather brilliant chapter on divorce. It's not at all true, let me assure you, that Morris Ernst leaves the reader hanging with his statement that government saw fit to exercise a role in the mating of man. Nor is it at all true, incidentally, though it may prove disappointing to some of the listeners, that Morris Ernst advocates the absence of control or participation by the state, by the church, nor, and I regret this may discourage some readers, is there the slightest suggestion that mail order divorce is the answer? Quite the contrary. And once again, this is a brilliant illustration of my enthusiasm for the book. Morris Ernst is concerned with the problem that one out of three of all marriages end in divorce in the United States today. Now, it may be unpleasant for a man to raise that thought. He does a great deal more than raise it. He illustrates a number of the legal reasons with which he is at first hand familiar for the existence of that unfortunate fact. He does a great deal in the chapter in which he discusses this to indicate how we may reduce the number of those who are divorced. And incidentally, there is one, though I will not save you from reading the book, there is one illustration of a method which, at least in the area in which it has been employed, has thus far resulted in no divorces occurring within those young people who avail themselves of that particular technique. I think you ought to read the book to find out. That's a great deal more than just leaving something hanging in midair.
Mr. Murray.
Well, I'd like to just quote again one of the suggestions that Mr. Ernst has made in this regard. I find this one of the most remarkable statements in this or any other book. He said, quote, "In terms of the integrity of the individual's ego, the freedom of religion, speech, and press have a true kinship to his right not to be confined in a home without joy or taste. For emotional freedom is not remote from intellectual freedom." Well, now, at first blush, that sounds like Dagwood Bumstead talking, or Barnacle Bill. It's very hard to take it seriously when you examine just what he's saying here. Now, how is one to head off the wanderings of this fifth freedom advocated by Mr. Ernst? Let's examine and see what he means. He says he feels that man should be privileged to have his joy and taste elsewhere. Well, I know a lot of men whose joy and taste exist with other men's wives in other men's homes. I wonder how we would get around that human failure.
Time to let loose our author of the afternoon, Mr. Morris Ernst. Mr. Ernst, I presume that you want to deny that you have any intention to become the Sears Roebuck of Amour.
Well, I don't deny or affirm anything. I sail a boat 3 months a year. I build furniture. I have joy out of life. I'm worried about the security of children in loveless homes. I'm worried about what happens to the children when there's divorce. I would change our entire concepts as to the reasons of divorce and lay down only one concept for the judge to look at, the happiness of the children. The adults can stew in their own juice. I'm against people being chained, children particularly, to loveless, bickering, fighting homes when the magic is out of the home. I am not opposed to the Catholic Church, and I want to make this very clear. I wish Mr. Murray had spoken to some of my friends who are leaders in the Catholic Church. I wish he'd spoken to the editors of Commonweal. I wish you'd spoken to Father Sheehy. These are fast friends of mine. All I'm saying is that I think the Catholic Church is wrong. Wrong in our society. To try further to prevent the spread through doctors of birth control information. I've taken up every case that's been taken up for decades on that issue. I know about the fight against the medical profession and the Catholic Church. There are only two dark areas left in the United States, Massachusetts and Connecticut, where doctors may not give patients advice which, in the doctor's judgment, should make a happier home. As far as the medical profession goes, I have a little personal familiarity because I nearly died about a year ago, and I'm worried about the doctors fooling patients. I tell you frankly that every person going to a hospital today thinks he's got cancer. That's due to a great cancer drive. But I'm worried about the doctors coming into my room and other patients' rooms and admitting that they fooled other patients and then expecting the patients to have faith in the medical profession. I'm worried about the cowardice of the medical profession in the birth control fight, in the fight for public health. As far as Freud goes, all I meant to indicate, and if the book is fully read, I think it's pretty clear, that the atom bomb can be an instrument of destruction, or can, as I think it will be, an instrument of human leisure, because we can run through atomic energy all of the machines and the factories and the railroads of the world. And the only way you can solve the perils of the atomic bomb is by the use of the human mind. And the exploration of Sigmund Freud into what the human mind really is seemed to me to be more important than atomic fission, because we can only cope with atomic fission's evils by human minds addressing themselves to the problem. I don't think I was too glib about it. I'm glib only for those who disagree with me when I say that the spirit of the human being is the hope of the world, that the difference between wealth and poverty in any society doesn't depend on the soil, doesn't depend on anything at all, but the development of the imagination of man. Now I welcome Mr. Murray's frank, subconscious to some extent, antagonism to this book. He let it out of the bag right at the start. He probably is a Catholic. He's probably diametrically opposed to me in my position on birth control and divorce. But we're living in a democracy. And for those who know anything about communism, they'll hate it as I do, because I've been a red baiter for decades. I'm only against the red baiter baiters. I'm against the people who want to stop us criticizing the tyranny of Stalin or Hitler. And it's good that we live in this land, one of the few lands left in the world, where Mr. Murray can come up and say, I'm against this book, because Ernst is evil, because he thinks that women should have the right to medical advice from doctors on contraception.
Mr. Murray.
Well, I'd just like to make a few corrections here. I don't think Mr. Ernst is evil. I just think he writes books too quickly. I think he enjoys setting himself up on an authority in too many things in which, despite his great prominence in the legal profession, he's utterly unqualified to discuss. And I think also that he has been unwise in so doing, particularly in view of his eminence in his own field. The average individual picking up a book by a man prominent in one field is liable to believe that that man is equally prominent and equally authoritative in all fields. I think, therefore, that someone in Mr. Ernst's position, in declaring himself so glibly and so freely, and mind you, I'm not inventing these, I'm quoting from the book, I don't pretend to know what Mr. Ernst means, I only know what he said, we're only discussing what he said. And I repeat that someone in his prominence, giving voice to what he has written, endangers the way it's to be interpreted and the effect it will have on the average individual who reads his book. Now, for example, I'd like to meet him head on in his discussion of the medical profession. He devotes considerable time to it. At the end of his chapter on the medical profession, he has this to say, I have had no training in the field of psychiatry or medicine. And having assured us that he doesn't know what he's talking about, he then proceeds to pontificate along the following lines. He admits that he resents illness and has no affection for sickly people. And then he says, I'm unwilling to admit that even the kindly medicine men of our generation are suitable people to act as temporary gods of my destinies. I should have much preferred to go to hell my own way than to heaven their way. Well, he'll probably have his own way in the end. I don't know. None of us are prophets.
Mr. Ernst.
Well, just a difference of opinion as to the function of the medical profession. I took the position that trouble starts when the mother sees her baby hit her head on the floor and she says, come here, I'll kiss it. And she kisses the head and the baby thinks that there's no longer pain. That's called psychosomatic medicine. I doubt the value of that for adult, grown-up people. I doubt the value of fooling people as to their health. I think in the long run, the human race is better off if you don't nurse girl it all through life. That's all on the medical profession, I must say, I'm not without familiarity, because I know what the medical profession has done in the field of health, delaying decent health insurance. The health of this nation isn't any too good, and we're entitled, as a great people, to a better health service.
Chern?
I'd like to knock down the straw man that's been set up by Mr. Murray, if I may, because I think it'll help clarify thinking about the book and also enjoying it. I think it's a completely unwarranted statement to say that Morris Ernst has chosen to discuss subjects outside of his own field, when it, I think, is quite plain that Mr. Murray is most excited about two subjects. He's come back to them several times. Subject of divorce, subject of contraception. Both of these happen to be very much in Mr. Ernst's field. He happens to be the attorney who has established the finest record in this country for participation in the key cases, the history-making cases, in these fields. These are fields of which he knows. Something else, may I add this. I would criticize an author for spending just a few months in writing a book if he began to think of what he was writing in those few months. But when a man has lived his whole life in these areas, I sometimes wonder why he takes that long to merely write down the thoughts with which he lived an entire life.
Well, I have just this to say by way of preface, something that's been on my mind for some time. As far as this medical authority is concerned, the thing that annoys me particularly about this book goes right back to what I said at the beginning. Here we have a distinguished attorney setting himself up as authority in a field about which he can know nothing. The American Medical Association, he says, so vocal in its fight against socialized medicine, has remained silent while thousands of women die needless deaths. Now, I submit to you that coming from an attorney to the average reader, that implies a grave and serious charge against the medical profession. It's a charge which is not documented. It's in no way documented, either directly or indirectly, and I defy Mr. Ernst in his present capacity to speak with authority on something so broad and so grave as is implied in that kind of a charge against all our doctors.
That charge, incidentally, is documented in the book, and I wish you'd read the book in order to find out which of the two of us has understood the book. Because,
well, gentlemen,
obviously one has not.
I think that it's time now for your summations, and I'm going to ask each one of you to make a one-minute closing statement without interruption. And while you're collecting your thoughts, here's a special announcement.
More than 2 years have passed since the end of the fighting in World War II. Yet thousands of American veterans, men who bore the brunt of battle on so many fronts, men whose blood and sweat made our victory possible, are still, after all this time, in hospitals. Many do not know if and when they can go back to normal living in the outside world. Meantime, it is possible to help these men, confined between the cold, white walls of hospitals, to keep up with the doings of the world. They can keep abreast of the times through their minds, and this means chiefly through books. Books on all the current problems, political, economic, international, books about interesting people, novels of human drama, novels with ideas, books about sports, about man's behavior, about discovery and travel. All these make windows through which men in hospitals can look out on the world and feel themselves a part of it. Would you like to give these veterans a part of it? Would you like to give these veterans a new window to see through? Would you like to help make them feel a part of the world they fought to save? Well, there's an easy way to do it, and this is a particularly fitting time, too, with Christmas just around the corner. Buy a book, a new book, a book that has general interest and that people are talking about, and send it as a Christmas gift to our veterans. Every veterans hospital has a library. To save you the trouble of finding out for yourself which hospital needs new books, the New York Veterans Administration has agreed to ship the books. All you have to do is choose a new book, one you'd like to read yourself, and send it to this following address. I'll read it very slowly. Library Division, Branch Office Number 2, Veterans Administration, 346 Broadway, New York 13. All right, Mr. McCaffrey?
All right, now, gentlemen, I have a one-minute summation time for each one of you. And, Mr. Murray, I'm going to start with you and give you exactly 1 minute, and then I'll have to cut you short.
Very well. I'm sorry that we didn't have time to get to one particularly vicious charge in this book against the Catholic Church on grounds that they have flooded, in the interests of their birth control views, flooded the mails of the United States with documentation and publications to married and unmarried women alike, and I'm quoting now from Mr. Ernst's book, advising them how to have sexual relations without the dangers of pregnancy. My friends, this has the worst charge that I could draw in this limited time from this very peculiar volume. It gives comfort to the worst kind of religious bigotry and anti-religious bias. It's not true. It's not documented. It's Mr. Ernst speaking of his own. He says that other people have the information but don't have the courage to publish it. I ask him, this is your book. You say it. It's untrue. Why don't you publish the proof if you have it? I feel that in permitting himself to write this book, he's done himself and his readers a grave disservice. In our discussion this afternoon, there have been other factors which have disturbed me, but we haven't had time to take them up.
Perhaps all right, I'm sorry, Mr. Murray. Mr. Chairman, your minute.
How much richer a world this would be if others would be as candid and sensitive in displaying their likes and dislikes, hopes, dreams, and aspirations. How much better a world this would be if the brilliantly practical plans Morris Ernst proposes in his book were rapidly applied. His vivid comments on birth control will make at least two vested groups uncomfortable. His first freedom treaty will be a body blow to the communist. His escrow plan would weaken those who profit from industrial strife and unemployment. Now, these are powerful enemies for any one book to attract. So I feel my friendship for Ernst and his book all the more keenly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And now, Mr. Ernst, you have a little more than a minute because
McCaffrey,
Mr. Chairman gave you some of his time.
I didn't intend to write a book solely on birth control and divorce. I thought I was writing a book on the spirit of free man. I discussed in some detail the Truman Civil Rights Committee, of which I was a member. I discussed in a chapter Franklin Delano Roosevelt, with whom I corresponded for 12 years, a letter to him every week and a letter back. And I put some of the correspondence in the book, and I loved FDR. I discussed cruising on the Maine coast. I discussed my friends and clients, Walter Winchell, Lenny Lyons, Drew Pearson, the effect of privacy in personal lives, the digging into the lives of human beings in columns. Is it good? Is it necessary? I discussed the right of privacy. I discussed a visit that I had with Jan Masaryk, a friend of mine, before I was bumped out of a window by the communists in Prague, and discussed it in terms of treaties relating to movies, radio, and press. There is a core to this book, at least I felt. It has very little to do with divorce and birth control. The core is the freedom of man's spirit to argue, debate, and feel.
And that is, after all, what we've been presenting this afternoon, and what the Author Meets the Critics always tries to give you is a frank and courageous discussion of things which affect us all as Americans, as free people living in a democracy, free to discuss. I'm sorry, gentlemen, that time is up for both the author and his critics, and here's Bob Sherry to tell you what lies ahead on our schedule.
Next week on the Sunday after Christmas, the guest author of The Author Meets the Critics will be Walter White, Executive Secretary of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, an internationally known expert on race relations in the United States. His book, The Man Called White, is an account of both his own life and the struggle for racial justice in America. Be sure to be with us next Sunday to hear Walter White meet critics Louis Gannett of the New York Herald Tribune and George Strater, leading reporter on Negro affairs for the New York Times. Now back to John McCaffrey.
Before closing, I'd like to thank Morris Ernst for coming here today to discuss his new book, So Far, So Good. And to thank you, Leo Chern, and you, James F. Murray, Jr., for joining us. This is John McCaffrey saying good afternoon for The Author Meets the Critics and sending you best wishes for a Merry Christmas.
The Author Meets the Critics is produced by Martin Stone and directed by Lee Jones. Bob Sherry speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.